So I'm going to talk about the work I'm doing with Brad Marston at Brown and Tapio Schneider, who was at Caltech, who is now in Zurich at ETH. So it's going to be about the cosine-linear approximation that we saw a bit over previous talks. And I'm going to apply it to large-scale proprietary circulations. So briefly, what I call cosine-linear model. So here it's for quadratic nonlinearities, and basically we use it here for different models, for barotropic primitive equations, QG equations. And it consists of retaining Wolff-mean flow interaction, where here my mean flow will be the zonal average, and retaining also the Reynolds stress, which are basically the interaction of waves of opposite zonal wave number. So all other eddy interaction, particular eddy interaction acting on eddies are neglected, so cannot have cascades, for example. So to explain what it is, I've written actually this slide for an audience which is not too mathy, so it was just for a very simple advection term. So I consider a quantity that is advected by a meridional flow, for example. But you can just think of it as a quadratic nonlinearity, so just a bilinear operator, and it's exactly the same thing. So you have the tendency of a quantity, which is basically the advection of the mean flow by the mean flow, the advection of the mean quantity by the mean flow, the advection of the eddies by the mean flow, the advection by the eddies of the mean flow, and the advection of the eddies by the eddies. So the cosine-linear approximation is just keeping the equation for the mean the same and linearizing the eddies around the mean flow. So you see that I just linearize the equation for the eddies. So this is the cosine-linear approximation. So why do we do that? The first thing is that it's a location that so that capture Wolff-mean flow interaction while it conserves the invariant that are consistent with this truncation, which are here the first and the second invariant. For higher order truncation, you can see one Ming poster, which is talking about how you can expand this kind of conservation for higher order closures. So why first and second order? First order is because the equation for the mean quantities are not changed. And second order is that you neglect eddy interaction whose role are only transferring variants among scales. So you don't, you still conserve second order invariant. Why people are doing that? It's because it's a linear framework, so it's useful for analytical theories. So here, a few examples here. You have the stochastic structural stability theory of Farrell and UNU. More recently, you have description of zonotropic instability by Srinivasan and Young. And you also have the kinetic theory of Bush and co-authors. And you can see the poster of Cesare Nardini here at this conference about that. Why we do that also, it's because it corresponds to a second order expansion. So it's a first step to develop statistical closure for inhomogeneous anisotropic turbulent flows. So what do we know about that? The first thing we know is that, for example, from the work of Freddy Boucher, it works in barotropic flow when there is a time scale separation between the mean flow and the eddies, and no instable modes. And this kind of things come from also from the theory of Brian Farrell, which tried to basically to explain the emergence of waves and the decay of waves and their interaction with the mean flow to non-model growth and decay. However, so this condition are not satisfied in the atmosphere because we're not barotropic. We are far from having this time scale separation. And we also have Brocken instability. So none of them are almost satisfied. But still, people are using that. And if you look at the literature in atmospheric dynamics over the past few decades, you can see that quasi-linear kind of reasoning are ubiquitous to explain a lot of things in large-scale atmospheric dynamics. And theoretically, this is not, to my knowledge, very... Yeah. Yeah, this is it. So look linear is this paper basically studies atmospheric circulation over a wide range of parameters. So That's why I say look, because if you do macro turbulence scalings over a very wide range of parameters, you see that it corresponds pretty closely to linear Borkink instability. But I say look because it looks linear. It doesn't mean that it's linear. So, we might agree on that. It doesn't mean that it's linear. It looks linear, at least. And how it is, So how it is, and actually the fact that that this kind of quasi-linear reasoning in the literature works, again, there's no real, to my knowledge, solid theoretical basis to that. One of them is was proposed by Schneider and Walker. So it's based on supercriticality argument that basically says that a vertical redistribution of entropy by Borkink eddies makes the flow self-organize into a critical state of weakly nonlinear interactions. But there is not a lot of things about that. So here, we want to see more systematically how quasi-linear approximation works in large-scale planetary baroclinic flows. And here I call large-scale forcing, because in more robust theories, you have usually small-scale stochastic forcing. So in the atmosphere, it's a bit different. You have the large-scale forcing, which is basically the differential of heating. So you have a whole spectrum of input of energy through Borkink instability and at large scales. And we also have what I call a strong surface friction, which is basically saying that the typical time scale of the friction is pretty close to the typical time scale of the eddies or to the eddy growth rate of the Borkink instability. And actually, quasi-linear models were already used in the literature to try to describe the atmosphere. So a few examples here. You have Whitaker and Sardeshmukh that try to stochastically force linear model to reproduce eddy statistics in a two-layer QG model. Zhang and Hell did that for storm tracks, and Delsol did that to try to reproduce the vertical structure of heat flux and momentum fluxes in the in the atmosphere. But the drawbacks of this model are they're all heavily tuned. I mean by heavily tuned that the mean flow is given from a fully nonlinear circulation, and the characteristic of the stochastic forcing and of the dissipation are tuned from fully nonlinear models. So they're not self-consistent basically. So here my simulation are I don't have any tuning. I just run the model, which is quasi-linear. So it's a bit different. So a brief description of the model. So it's based on the FMS GFDL pseudospectral dynamical core. I will show two different versions for the radiative and the convective parameterization. You have one where the radiation is just a Newtonian relaxation toward a temperature profile which is unstable. So we have a convective scheme to stabilize the atmosphere. And the other one is the Helden-Suarez model, which is basically the relation toward here a statically stable temperature profile. They differ also for the boundary layer, for the planetary boundary layer. Here I have diffusion of momentum and static energy and dry static energy. And here I have just Rayleigh drag for the boundary layer. I have a uniform surface, no seasonal cycle. And all the simulation you will see are run at T85 with 30 vertical sigma levels. And when I want to make time average, it will be usually 600 days after 1,400 days spin up. So here you have the reference for the description of the models, if you're interested. So how it's done, how the eddy interactions are removed. So again, the same equation as before. So we saw that when you linearize the equation for the eddies, it's just saying that this is equal to this is. So I just put an overbar over the second order term. And this is it. So it was actually performed in this GCM by Ogorman and Schneider in 2007. So Ogorman and Schneider, this is the first result they got. So there is a typo here. I just see it. So this is the full model. And this is the quasi-linear model, of course. Yeah, exactly. So it's not what it says. No, the full model is at the top. And the quasi-linear model is at the bottom. Yeah. So the line, so here you have the equator, southern hemisphere, northern hemisphere. It's a sigma level model, so here you have the vertical coordinates. The green line is the true purpose that we just talked in the previous talk. Here you have the wind. So here you have basically the eddy-driven jet, subtropical jet. And you also have three dotted lines, which, to give an idea of the thermal structure of the atmosphere, it's basically the three isentropes, so 295, 320, and 350. So here you have the results with the nonlinear model that were obtained by Ogerman and Schneider. You see that you get jets, which is the first thing, which are a bit stronger. The typical length scale of the jet are the typical meridional extent of the jet is not quite well resolved. The jets are a bit thinner in the meridional direction. So there's some success of this very simple model. You have jets, but the detail of the circulation is not totally right. And actually, yeah. Full model is a fully nonlinear model, so it's the GCM where I don't remove the eddy-eddy interaction. So it's. That's what I said. It's wrong here. Oh, okay. I said there is a typo on the slide. So yeah, the full model is just the fully nonlinear model, and it's the exact same model where I just remove the eddy-eddy interactions. Oh, the setup it's just a very small perturbation on the vorticity, and there is no flow. So just a very, very small perturbation on the vorticity. The forcing, yeah. So the forcing is, I have a temperature profile. I should have put what temperature profile looks like. So it looks like it's basically a radiative equilibrium temperature profile. So and I just relax to that. So I warm the tropical region. I cool the polar region. And how the model is initiated is just a very small perturbation in the vorticity. So I don't prescribe any circulation. So yeah. Exactly. I'm driving Burke-Lincoln stability, and then you have the development of the circulation. So here, this is what the eddy momentum flux convergence look like. So what I call momentum flux, it's u prime v prime time cos of the latitude because you're on a sphere. So this is the divergence of this quantity. So here, you again, sorry about that. You have the typo. This is the full model, and this is the quasi-linear model. It's a bit disturbing, yeah. So what we have, we basically have convergence in the mid-latitude, divergence in the tropics. This is what Jeff Vallis was talking in the previous talk. So the convergence here in the mid-latitude is balanced by surface friction on the at the surface, and the vertical structure is basically determined by thermal wind balance at the leading order. So this is a very important feature in wave wind flow interaction in the atmosphere. You basically have generation of waves to Burke-Lincoln stability in the mid-latitudes. These waves are propagating toward the tropics. And because you have propagation of Rossby wave, you have transport of momentum in the other direction. And you have wave breaking here. So you have convergence of momentum where the wave originates. And this convergence of momentum is balanced by surface friction. This is the top of the Hadley cell here. We have the Hadley cell here that we saw in the previous talk. And this divergence, actually, it's an essential driving of this Hadley cell. So what do we have in this quasi-linear model? So you see that the structure of the eddy momentum flux is quite different. In particular, you have a pretty robust feature of Earth-like simulation like this, which is not resolved, which is the fact that eddy momentum flux are concentrated just below the tropopause. Here, in particular, where you have divergence, this divergence doesn't occur in the quasi-linear model. And it is something particularly, there is something missing in this simulation. We're gonna try to see what.
What do you think is the petals of wave activity in the ground?
Actually, I don't know. And it's a feature that you also have actually in the full simulation here. And I tried to look actually a bit in the literature, and it's not something which is very well documented. And actually, I worked a bit as well on trying to understand why the edimental flux are in the upper troposphere. And even that is not quite, yeah.
So the quasi-linear results look worse than humanly imaginable, right?
Yeah. Here it might be related to waves that are decaying because of surface friction, basically. Yeah. So, but I don't know exactly what kind of waves are exactly here, because you cannot have gravity waves because of the inertial scheme. Yeah.
Is your resolution the same in the
azimuthal direction as in the latitude? It's THFF, so you have it's about the same. Yeah. So you have 128 latitudinal grid points and 265 in the meridional direction. So the previous paper was published in 2007, saying that we capture some important features of the circulation, but on the edimental flux we see that there's things that are not well captured, and I'm going to try to understand what is going on there. Another feature which is not well captured is looking at the eddy kinetic energy. So here you have the here it's not anymore the convergence of momentum of flux, it's the momentum of flux itself. So here you have momentum going this way, here you have momentum going this way, sorry, the other way, momentum going this way, momentum going this way. Here you have the quasi-linear case where the momentum of flux are not anymore enhanced in the upper troposphere and are much more smaller. And here you have the eddy kinetic energy. And the eddy kinetic energy is way stronger in the quasi-linear approximation. And actually, looking at this and this tells something about the structure of the eddies. Because if you think in terms of, if you divide the two, it's some sort of correlation between U prime and V prime. And basically here, U prime and V prime don't correlate well in the quasi-linear approximation. And they correlate pretty well in the fully nonlinear simulation. And good correlation means you have momentum flux, basically, and you have wave breaking. So the fact that you have a lot of waves and you don't have much momentum flux might mean something that we're missing something about the irreversibilities related to wave breaking. So to understand better this observation, we're going to run a few life cycle experiments. So what I call life cycle experiments, it's basically an initial value problem. So I take a linear version of the GCM. I determine what are the fastest growing mode. It corresponds to a wave number 6. And this mode, I let it evolve freely in the model where I put at zero all the forcing and the dissipation. I just keep the upper viscosity. So it's just I see how a Brocklinic eddy evolves in both models. So first result about that, it's some conversion of energy. So in black you have what we call the Brocklinic conversion. So it's the conversion of eddy available potential energy to eddy kinetic energy, and in red you have the conversion of zonal kinetic energy to eddy kinetic energy. Here it's in the full model. Here it's the no eddy model, or the quasi-linear model, and it's against time. So in the full model, at the beginning, you have this quite well-known feature, which was described for the first time in Simons and Hoskins in 78. So you have the increase of Brocklinic conversion through Brocklinic instability, and just following this increase in saturation, you have basically the barotropic decay. And here you have several subsequent growth of eddies. So what is wrong in the quasi-linear model? You have two big features which are particularly different. The first one is the fact that you can have, at the end of some life cycles, so here, and here, you can have very significant barotropic conversions. So you're basically creating eddies from the mean flow. And you can also have some significant Brocklinic decay at the end of the cycles, which is something that you totally don't have in the full model. For the positive vertical conversion, after some life cycle, even in the full model, you have it a bit. But for the Brocklinic decay, you don't have that. Yeah. Well, zonal wave number 6. Oh, here, yeah, after a few cycles, it's not anymore 6. But here, most of them were 6. But of course, you have, especially in the full model, you have some sort of inverse cascade here, and you have some gravis mode that are developing. But here, several cycles are really wave number 6. So you really have secondary developments at the same wave number. We're going to see that. Yeah. So here it's diagnostic for how the waves is developing. So we have basically the epiflux and its divergence, which is the quasi-geostrophic PV flux. So this is average over 1 day, and it's a normal average. And so this is what happens at day 5. So basically during the baroclinic growth of the eddy. So the vertical epiflux here is related to the fact that we have growth of a baroclinic eddy, and the other signature of this growth of baroclinic eddy is the negative PV flux. And you see that in both models, the both models are consistent. You basically have baroclinic eddy in the baroclinic growth in the lower part of the atmosphere. So what happens a bit later? So let's go. When we have this big barotropic decay. So here at D26 and here at D42. So the wave packet has moved upper in the atmosphere. It's basically, it's going toward the equator when it hits the tropopause here. The negative values of divergence of EP flux, so the negative QGPV flux, is basically related to nonlinear saturation in this zone. And in the no-eddy AD model, for now, we basically have the same thing, even though the amplitude is much bigger. So quantitatively it's different. Quantitatively, it's still pretty similar. So what happens at the end of a life cycle? Here we have the wave activity. The epiflux is of weaker amplitude, but we still have some positive PV flux where we had negative PV flux, which basically means that the surf zone here is remitting a bit of the wave activity, but not significantly. However, in the no-eddy model, we have big remission of wave activity. This kind of things can be understood in terms of PV rearrangement here, but I don't really want to talk about that. If we just think in terms of wave activity conservation in a finite amplitude framework, in the no-eddy AD model, we don't have dissipation of wave activity because we don't have this AD interaction and this filamentation of potential vorticity. So basically, we're missing what is important for wave activity dissipation in the atmosphere, which will be this potential vorticity filamentation, like you can have, for example, in the most simple theories of wave breaking, which is this Dworson-Warren solution. You have this cat's eye developing and this filamentation of vorticity inside the cat's eye. In the no-eddy model, you cannot have that. So you don't have basically dissipation of wave activity. So if in terms of conservation of wave activity, if the wave activity builds up inside the surf zone, it has to go somewhere if it's not dissipated. And here, the simulation shows that it's basically re-emitted from the surf zone.
So are you saying something like in the real system, the PV gets mixed, and therefore the PV variance also goes to zero?
Exactly.
Whereas here, your variable Q prime, although the Q bar Y goes to zero, the Q prime is unrelated to it, it just stays at.
Yeah, and here it's difficult to think in terms of pseudo-momentum. I really think in terms of finite amplitude of activity, because the pseudo-momentum is not, especially in that case, not well-defined. Because we have this advection of strong anomalies of PV north of weak PV, such that actually the QY bar changes sign, basically. So it's the waves are too big. It's a really nonlinear wave breaking.
The,
Actually, there is very much. This was described in a zonally truncated model by Peter Haynes and McIntyre in 87. And it's exactly what happens in a more complex framework. It was done in the framework of SWW. Here we're not in SWW, but it's basically what happens. But the thing is that we can interpret it in terms of conservation of wave activity in finite amplitude here. And it just means that to have acceleration and deceleration of a flow, we must have some irreversibility. And the relevant irreversibility here, it's really related to direct cascade of entropy. So that's why, for example, a theory like SWW, even if it's totally inviscid, it will predict momentum fluxes just because you have cascade of entropies. Yeah.
Based on our work, and as you say, we did the quasi-linear version of the Stewart's and Warren must be wave critical there.
Exactly, yeah.
And instead of mixing up and wrapping around the potential vorticity and having an entropy cascade, we just had two blobs of potential vorticity that went round and round because the four things could not mix.
This is exactly that. Exactly, because if you write the U prime V prime bar, so the momentum flux, you can write it as basically the projection of a sin of a sinus of the integral of Q over the critical layer, and just because you have this blob like turning around in the cat's eye, if you project it on the sinus, it's gonna just oscillate. And here it's not exactly what happens because we're not in the case of the SWW solution, but it still tells something about physically what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah. Another way to look at this approximation is that you kept only triads in a certain category, namely ones that link a zonal mode with two wave modes.
Yeah.
But because you kept certain triads and thrown out all others, you kept the whole number of triads. You're keeping all the quadratic invariants.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And this is the big problem of the quasi-linear approximation. So basically but still we have some surprise about what it can do. We're already done. Oh. Can I just show one slide? So this was just. Yeah, I'm gonna just show a few slides. So basically, to show again to make the same point, I can run my quasi-linear model, but instead of having non-linear critical layer, I can just have a diffusive critical layer. So I just increase my order of the diffusion. So I kept the time scale of the diffusion similar, but I just increased the order from an order 4 to an order 2. And it's magic, I get back this upper level enhancement of the motor flux, even though the vorticity flux doesn't look like reality because the critical layer here is diffusive. It's not nonlinear. But still, I get the right amplitude of the wind. I get the motor flux at the right place. Yeah, so I'm going to go fast on the other simulation. It's just basically doing the same, looking at the same thing, but when I vary the surface friction. And surface friction is important because it's what balances momentum flux, and it's what removes kinetic energy from the atmosphere. And it's something described in the literature, not very well explained, but pretty well described, is the fact that when you decrease the surface friction, you basically move your jet toward the pole. So I go to 8 days here and then 16 days, and you see that in the full model, the jet is moving. What happens in the quasi-linear model, it doesn't move much, and then suddenly, between day 8 and day 16, we get almost the right solution in the full model. And actually, you can have here, between here and here, you have a, an hysteresis behavior, and you can have like multiple equilibria at some frictions. I don't fully understand what's happening here, but my first guess is just that the hyperviscosity is strong enough to dissipate the wave. We basically have a nonlinear critical layer which is small enough in the meridional direction such that hyperviscosity becomes important. It's a first guess. I'm not totally sure it's what happens. And you still see that even at this friction time scale, some quantities are not well captured. In particular, the eddy kinetic energy is too strong. And the eddy statistics in general are not quite right, even though both the mean flow and the forcing by the eddies on the mean flow is right, but not the eddy statistics. And we can see that on the spectra. So this is the spectra, the Broglie-Nitsch EKE in the nonlinear model in dotted lines and the full model with the straight lines. And the spectra are pretty different. So if I'm done in time, I'm just going to go to the conclusion. So the first thing is that the big problem of the quasi-linear approximation is the fact that in the atmosphere, the relevant irreversibility process for work dissipation is in eddy interaction. And actually, the best way to see that is looking at the even when the eddy interaction are small, it's true. So if you think, for example, if you think about the SWW solution, it shows pretty neatly that PV rearrangement, so at the first order inside the critical layer, determines at the leading order what's happening outside the critical layer where the flow is wave-like. So I think this is something pretty important, which is not captured by the quasi-linear approximation. The other thing I didn't have really time to talk about that is I stated that in the atmosphere, a lot of reasoning are based on some sort of quasi-linear kind of reasoning. And in particular, the enhancement of the amount of flux in the atmosphere usually is understood by the fact that you have stronger PV gradients in the upper atmosphere. So if you think in terms of linear theory, you must have strong eddy flux of vorticity. And this explains why you have enhancement of moment of flux. Another way of seeing that is saying just that the critical line are further away from where the waves are generated, so you have this strong transfer of moment of flux. But it's from the quasi-linear simulation, it seems not to be totally true. And it seems not to be totally true. The other point is that for weak enough friction, the quasi-linear approximation captures mean flows and eddy forcing on the mean flow, but not the eddy statistics. And it's not totally clear to me, because the first thing I thought was just that we have viscous critical layer and hyperviscosity makes the job. But it's not obvious, because we still have more EKE, so you still have some sort of resonant modes in the circulation. And the last conclusion is related to what we can learn from that if we want to develop a direct statistical simulation of the atmosphere. So it seems that third order closures are necessary, and third order closure basically consists of parameters of the eddy flux of potential entropy and capturing physically the nonlinear wave breaking. So this is it.
Thank you. So there's still some time for discussion. Oliver?
Thanks. I think it's made very clear that sort of when the linear theory doesn't work anymore, the quasi-linear theory, we need to switch to what you might call like strongly nonlinear thinking, like wave breaking. Yeah. And so along that line, your final point that maybe adding one more cumulant to the mix, isn't it more the case that once you lose that the accuracy in this quasi-linear thinking, then it doesn't matter how many cumulants you keep. If you keep three or four, you would have to keep everything. Why do you think a third one will make a difference?
Yeah, actually here, for this is an example where you go to the third cumulant. So it's a barotropic version of the problem I showed today. So here you have eddy kinetic energy in the full model second order, so quasi-linear, and third order. And basically, I initiate a wave here, and I see how it decays. And here you basically have, you see, that something predicted by critical layer theory, which is that waves are remitted, can be remitted from the critical layer. In C2, you have it's remitted at the same amplitude, basically. You don't have any storage of wave activity inside the critical layer. And it's associated with this pattern in the moment of flux. So absorption, reflection, absorption, reflection. And going to the third order actually corrects things here. So we really have absorption of waves. And actually, this I have not finished doing it, but in this case, for the SWW solution, we can have the analytical solution for this. So it's just extending the Hansen-McIntyre paper of 87. It's possible to do it at the third order for some sort of EDQNM kind of closure. But it solves things here. I'm not sure it's going to solve everything, but it makes things better.
Yeah, carry on.
Okay.
The question I think you've identified, which you know is resonates, is really in a sense what you want to know is which simple closure that is minimally consistent with what should be conserved, etc., works best. And maybe for what kind of problem. This would seem to be the next step in the question you're asking. I mean, one could do a full fancy closure, but that becomes almost as laborious as solving the full problem numerically. So, I mean, the sort of things I like to do quasi-analytically is a wave-breaking model in the wave kinetic equation, which certainly will give you certainly the new source of irreversibility and nonlinearity in action, et cetera, stare you in the face. I think, you know, the question would be what kind, have you experimented with different types of things, different types of hyperviscosities, et cetera?
I've done that a bit. I showed like an experiment where I have like a strong diffusion where it corrects things, but the phenomenology is not right. And I've changed also the hyperviscosity to see how it changed things. And I showed here that around.
But have you tried sort of an amplitude dependent and intensity?
No. Oh, I see what you mean. Okay, no, I haven't done that.
That's not actually going on, right?
Okay. No, I understand. Okay, I'm gonna come and talk to you about that. Thanks. Four, with a time scale of, I've tried from 4 hours to 12 hours, damping time scale on the smaller scale. I've even tried more than that, actually. No, in my experiment where I vary them, I varied from over several, from 1 hour to 10 or 20 hours. I didn't show the results here, but it's the range.
So this is related to Pat's this is related to Pat's comment. I mean, within Farrell and Ioannou's stochastic structural stability theory, they would mimic the inclusion of a third cumulant by putting in some random terms, and that kind of messes up all your conservation laws. But
yeah,
I was just wondering if you can.
Actually, we tried. I didn't do it, but some people try to do in this model to have the stochastic forcing, and it doesn't work well. Okay. And still, actually, it's a very good question because I'm still confused about why the SSST works. And in their case, they don't have ensemble modes, so that makes things different. So modeling the ADN interaction by stochastic forcing won't be a good parameterization for the nonlinear saturation of the ADs, which is important from that. So this is the first thing. I haven't done the calculation, but my guess is that they're in a barotropic model and they have surface friction, and maybe they're in a mode where the damping of the wave by the surface friction makes things correct. And I have some simulation where it works, actually. For example, I have some weird simulation where I inverse the radiative parameterization. So I cool the tropics, and I warm the equator. So I have my eddies at the surface. And when I have my eddies at the surface, actually, the quasi-linear approximation will work better. So, and again, I'm confused about how it works, the SSST, because to me, if you term, for example, in terms of solar momentum, all modes are normal, so I don't know how they can have non-normal, I don't know how non-normal growth can explain this kind of thing. Okay, this is it. Okay, yeah, this is what I think, because you have norms where everything is normal. Anyways, yeah.
This on? Yes. This will be short. It's a response or an extra comment on your remark. Why not? Maybe you need all of the cumulants. As he's implying here on the second paragraph on the right, a strict third order cumulant closure is not statistically realizable.
Yeah.
The theorem is either you have two or you have all of them in order to get realizability. But they're doing something a little bit more here, which is, as he says, projecting out any negative eigenvalues that show up. That is effectively putting in something about all cumulants in a way that is probably not very well understood or controlled, but it is related to the fact that you need all cumulants in order to get a realizable theory. And that's just
actually, this is the closure developed by Brad Marson, and there is another one which is more close to ED2NM, and it also works, and it's difficult to tell which one is best. We didn't really try to look which one is best, but.
Okay, thanks. So we'll move on to the next speaker. So while the next speaker is being set up, so there's a quick announcement. That is that the photograph is now back on. So we're going to have the photograph after the posters and before the dinner. Is that right? Or before the reception? Probably before drinks, yeah. Drink and posters, then photograph, then dinner. Right, so the next speaker is Michael Calkins from Colorado, who will talk on quasi-geostrophic convection models for geophysical and astrophysical bodies.